Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I am a psychoanalyst specializing in food, weight, and body image issues, and I'm here to help you lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health all without ever having to go on another diet. If you'd like to call in and talk with me and my guests today, the number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. So, as you guys know, I am firmly and adamantly anti-dieting. Diets don't work in the long run. Diets actually make you gain weight in the long run. Truth, scientifically proven. And in part, that's because diets only focus on what you're eating and not why. But in addition to the psychology of why diets don't work, there's also a physical component, and that's where today's guest comes in. So I am excited to have author Fred Quayler on the show today. He is the author of the best-selling book, The Buffer Zone Diet, and I think you're going to want to hear what he has to say. And by the way, despite the word diet in the title, this is not a diet book. There are no meal plans. You don't have to count calories or carbs. Instead, Fred has a revolutionary approach to eating, and I think you're going to find it really interesting. So let me tell you a little bit about Fred. Fred is not a doctor, but he has distinguished himself in various fields. He is one of the world's top diamond experts. He is the founder and CEO of Diamond Cutters International. He is a three-time Guinness Book record holder in jewelry design. I did not know that. That's super cool. Oh, look at that. I'm seeing his work right now. And indeed, he deserves his accolades. He is a consultant to investment and financial firms and a best-selling author. His clients include the Dallas Cowboys, the Denver Broncos, the Detroit Red Wings, plus lots of celebrities, too numerous to mention. His personal commitment to making a difference in people's lives has taken him on a journey into the world of obesity, and his discoveries not only saved his life, but can save yours. So, Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. LA's gorgeous.
And where are you from?
Houston.
Houston. Yeah. Looks a little bit different outside, yeah?
Yeah. Well, the sun's part is still the same, but yeah, it's very pretty here. Gorgeous. Thank you.
So, tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you come to write this book? With your diamond background and your jewelry and all of that, how did this happen?
Most people know me as the diamond guy. I wrote the best-selling book called How to Buy a Diamond, not the Buffer Zone Diet. And so that's what I've been doing my whole life. But then a few years ago, in 2014, my wife's dad got stage 4 kidney cancer that spread to his bones. And it's kind of one of those events that happens in someone's life. Someone gets really sick or someone might lose a job or whatever it was. And that was a major thing. My whole life, I've worked really hard to stay chubby. food and I go way back. I had learned that food could be scarce and that there might not be enough food at times. And food was a reward. There's like, I had all these kind of weird relationships with food that I kind of drug into my life. And so by the time I was in my 50s, I still was considered overweight. But I convinced myself that I wasn't obese and that I was pleasantly plump and I looked okay. And I did enough stuff to convince myself that everything was all right, that I was exercising enough and I was watching my portions and that kind of stuff. But then when my father-in-law got sick with a stage 4 kidney cancer, the next 3 months were just a blur. I wasn't working out every single day. I was eating waffle fries at Chick-fil-A, and suddenly I got on the scale, and at least for me, I had a number in my head that said, you do not go above this number. If you go above this number, that's it. You got to go on a big diet. And
lots of people can relate to that. That yeah. number that thou must not pass this number, and when you do,
oh ooh. God! You know, it's crazy. For the longest time of my life, I had three wardrobes. I had the skinny wardrobe that those clothes are just beautiful and gorgeous, and you'd spend maybe 2 weeks a year in those clothes, and then you had these middle of the bell curve clothes, which kind of took a beating because that's where you tended to live, and then the oh my gosh, I'm in my largest pair of jeans clothes and stuff. And so I had left the middle part of the bell curve. I was over 210 weight-wise. And I said, I can't believe I'm here again. I'd been since my 30s, since I'd been on a major diet. And then spent the next year working at losing the weight and stuff. But yet it wasn't working. I didn't understand that there are so many factors that contribute to our ability to lose weight. Are we getting enough sleep? Are we getting enough exercise? What's our environment look like? Are we in a chaotic environment? And then even you said it, the buffer zone diet really isn't a diet book. It's a diet is just, the food that you eat and stuff like that. So I didn't understand my relationship with food, and I think as my environment became more chaotic, that was the impetus to, wait a minute, I need to take a stop and take a look at my life.
One of the things that I that really struck me about the book are the myths that you blast. There are some ideas that we have like, oh, you absolutely must drink 8 glasses of water a day. Like, no question, that's how it is. And you really, with great scientific depth and precision, counter some of these ideas. Tell us some about that.
Well, I think what happened was, when I went on my, quote, second big diet of a lifetime, and I realized that I was having trouble, the weight wasn't coming off. At some point, if someone gives you a recipe to make a cake, and every time you make it, it's horrible and nobody wants to eat it, sometimes you have to question the recipe or the ingredients. And so this idea of, our beliefs have a dramatic effect on our lives. Our beliefs become our thoughts. I think Gandhi said that. Our thoughts become our words. Words become our habits. Our habits become our values. Our values become our destiny. And so I thought, let me go back and take a look at all these things that people tell us, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. We need to drink 8 8-ounce glasses of water. We need to eat a bunch of little small meals every single day so that your sugar level in your blood is nice and level and stuff like that. And my reaction is, let me see if there's any basis in truth in this. Is breakfast the most important meal of the day? Do I need to carry a gallon of water with me? I see people that do this. I'll go to work and a person will have this big jug of water that they've got with them. And I'm like, every second, they will drink water. And it turns out it isn't true. It turned out there were so many different things that I thought were true that weren't. And water certainly was one of them. We don't need to, it's almost like a plant. I remember the first time I killed the plant. I killed the plant so many different ways. The first, I didn't water it enough. And then when my mom said, no, you have to water the plant. And I said, fair enough. And then I killed it because I watered it too much and stuff like that. So as you probably know and understand that finding that balance, a buffer zone is this idea that there's a time that's not optimal to be eating. But one thing I think we all know, we don't need to read a book to know this, is if we stop eating, we will die. If we eat too frequently, we'll get fat. So what's that balance? What's that perfect space between how many times, how frequently we should eat it on a daily basis, and how many times should we not?
Hold that thought, Fred. We have a call. Whoops. We had caller. Can you call back? I did not get to you in time. I'm so sorry. 818-602-4929. Someone was just calling in and I didn't pick it up on time. Please call back. So, Fred, you said that the buffer zone diet is not a weight loss diet.
Yeah.
What is it? How do you describe this? Your tagline is, it's not what you eat, it's when you're eating.
Yeah, I the typical American has 23 pounds of body fat that they don't want on them. So what's happening is, unconsciously, typical person is waking up in the morning, and they're going, I'm not hungry, and I'm overweight. They skip breakfast. Unbeknownst to them, now their cortisol levels are rising through the day. Lunch is when I can fit it in. It's literally not scheduled. And then they come home at the end of the day and they go, hey, I haven't been eating all day. And I know I'm allowed, pick a number, 1,500, 1,800, 2,000 calories. Almost like a calorie hoarder, and says, well, now I can have them all tonight. No, you missed that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I use the analogy of a person who takes, let's say, a pill, and they have to take a pill when they wake up in the morning, one at noon. Time and time again, a person might miss that morning pill, and they go to the doctor and say, well, should I double up at noon? No, that pill was supposed to be used for the future, for the hours between now and lunch. If those hours have already gone, you don't double up, because now you have twice as much pill in your system for the next few hours. And so I think people go, geez, if I skip breakfast, I can have twice as much at lunch. If I don't have a big lunch, I can have even a bigger meal at night. Turns out that's not true.
And what does it do to your body when you do that?
What happens is your body only needs about 75 to 100 calories every single hour to operate. Doesn't need that much. It depends on what you're doing, of course. But when you flood it with so many calories, 1,000, 1,500, 2,000, 3,000, in one huge giant sitting, what ends up happening? Oh,
hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina and Fred. Hello.
Hi, this is Elena. I can't get into the. To the show. What am I doing wrong?
You're on the
show. I just called the phone number.
You're on the show.
But I can't hear it on my phone, so I don't know what you're talking about today.
Oh, well, then that case, calling
in. Must be a glitch with me.
It might be a glitch.
I'll try again.
I'm talking with Fred Quayler, who's the author of The Buffer Zone Diet. So check it out, and if you have another question, call back.
I will.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to know what you were talking about, but I will call back.
Yeah,
thank you.
Google the buffer zone. Bye.
Thank you.
So, Fred, you were saying that the effect on your body after eating like these big quantities of calories, because you really it's like your body gets overwhelmed and can't process it.
Think of it this way: go to anybody that you know and say, did you know that you had two fuel tanks on your body? And even if they say yes, ask them to identify them. Most people don't know that you have a primary fuel tank in your liver and your muscles, and a secondary fuel tank in your adipose tissue, fatty acid tissue, on your body. And so one is for the liver and muscles is for immediate needs that your body has, and the other one is for extra storage. So anytime you eat too much, your glycogen, your first fuel tank, fills up. It can hold up about 2,000 calories max. And then after that, everything else gets dumped into the fatty acid tissue. Mm. So every single time you starve your body during the day when it needed the fuel and could use it, and then you plow all those calories into your body when you're about to rest/sleep, the idea, your body's just going to keep storing fat, yeah.
Now, I think I'd love for you to share a little bit more about your own experience, because you alluded to it and you said that, you know, you did everything right and it just didn't work. But tell us more about what was confounding and frustrating and just painful that led you to embark on the copious research that this book is the result of all of that. I think people would really like to know your struggle and your triumph.
Well, what happened with me was the very first time that I went on a serious diet, which was actually many years ago when I was in my 30s, it happened after I'd had a stroke. I had a right hemisphere stroke. I was paralyzed on the left side of my body. And the doctor said to me, hey, man, you need to lose some weight or the next stroke's going to kill you. And so that first diet, I did it old school way. You count all the calories and the carbs and the fat, and it took me months, and it was painful, and I fantasized more about food than anything else. I have a beautiful wife. That shouldn't be the case. But I eventually lost the weight and then did a pretty good job of keeping it off for over 10 years. And then, as I said before, when the weight snuck back up on me and I finally got back to over 210 and stuff, I went, okay, well, I know what I need to do. I'll just go back on the same old diet that I did before, eat nothing more than 1,800 calories, eat six little small meals every single day. The problem was, after 30 days, I hadn't lost the weight. I was actually heavier. And then I went, okay, everyone says small meals, eat less, and exercise more. And so that's what I did. I ate less, and I exercised more. I was doing 90 minutes of cardio a day, and then 30 minutes of strength training. And so it was just crazy. And so it's to do anything and not see results is just very, very difficult.
Especially 2 hours of exercise a day,
yeah,
and limiting your food intake.
Yeah. At some point, what happened was I reached out to some folks I knew at Men's Health Magazine, and I said, hey, guys, what's going on here? And they said, we don't know how to tell you this. It's possible you're going through something called weight resistance syndrome. And I'm like, what's this? They said, have you ever been on one big serious diet in your life? And I said, yeah, but when I was in my 30s. They said, well, that's all you may have. You may only really have that one good one. And I said, what do you mean? It should work anytime. They said, no. If your body, your brain thinks, gosh, that was so painful the first time you went through it, it doesn't want to go through it again. So now here it is, many years later, you're trying it again, and your body is releasing a stress hormone called cortisol into your body. So even though you're eating the perfect amount of calories and you're exercising exactly right, your cortisol levels are affecting the bioavailability of the nutrients you're eating. Mm-hmm. So your body is literally at war with you. And that's why you have inflammation. That's why you're not losing the weight. That's why you're sick and tired and all that kind of stuff. And so I stuck with that for, gosh, about a year and ended up 6 pounds heavier after a year of dieting. Mm-hmm. It's like you said, dieting's doesn't work. It actually made it worse. And then I just snapped, and I just said, that's it, I'm just going to be a fat guy. The heck with this. I hadn't had my aha moment yet about the buffer zone or that kind of stuff.
So what led to the aha moment?
So it was, it literally was about a year, and ups and downs the entire year of trying to lose weight. And then one day I came back from a trip to New York. I got on the scale. I was now 216 instead of 210. And I said, that's it. Maybe it's something wrong with me. I'm just supposed to be a fat guy.
Hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina and with Fred. Who's this?
Hello. I was just calling in to listen. I didn't realize. Sorry. I'm just trying to listen.
Oh, you're just trying to listen?
Yeah.
Is it not working on the app?
No.
It's not working on the app.
Well, it's not working. There's a link in the email that I clicked on, and when I click on that, it takes me to a page that has a lot of different channels and shows, and there's nothing to click on that says Fred.
You have to click on Dr. Nina's show on channel 2. It should say now playing. But I did that,
and there was somebody talking about the Holocaust.
Oh, there seems to be a problem. Thanks for alerting us to that, and I think you're the second person that's had problems hearing the show, so thank you for letting us know. Is there any question that you have for Fred since you're here?
Well, I was just interested to hear, it sounded like there was something about certain times that are better than others to eat or have meals, and I just was interested in hearing about that.
Yeah, hi, this is Fred. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with the radio, but I'll be glad to tell you. What I found out was that your body has two fuel tanks, a primary fuel tank that lives in your liver and muscles, and a secondary fuel tank, which is in your adipose tissue. And so what I found out was that when we overeat, we first top off our first fuel tank in the liver and muscles, glycogen fuel, and then anything after that goes into the triglycerides or fatty acid tissue. And so what happens is you have people who go, hey, I have a certain number of calories that I'm allowed to have in a particular day. Maybe they're on Weight Watchers and they get a certain amount of points or something. And what they'll tend to do is thinking that it doesn't make a difference when they consume those calories. So there's a kind of a miser part of our brains that thinks, geez, I only have a certain number of calories, a certain amount of points, then I'm going to wait. I'm only going to use them when I want them. So they tend to skip or have a poor breakfast. Lunch is bad. And then they get to the end of the day, and they go, hey, fabulous. I've got all these points, all these calories I can use. No, you have to fuel to go. You can't feed the past. So when you say, hey, I know that I'm supposed to have about 1,500 calories in a day, that's a certain portion for breakfast, about 20% for breakfast, another 20% if that's another small meal for lunch, and then 50% for whatever your main meal of the day is. If you've missed that breakfast, you don't get to double up or have rollover calories to the next meal. And since people aren't aware of that, what ends up happening is they store extra fat when they don't want to, even though they may be eating the right amount of calories, but at the wrong time.
Okay, so it's not so much about a specific time, but it's just making sure that there's regular spaced intervals of time.
No, the time is critical. For example, it takes 10... The most important thing I would want you to get away from listening today is most people are unaware it takes 10 hours to access fat fuel in the body. You can't have anything in your upper GI. You have to have 50% on glycogen fuel and a low cortisol. So you have a person who says, I'm going to eat at 7, 8, 9 o'clock tonight, and then they have breakfast tomorrow morning. They didn't put enough time between the last meal of the day today and tomorrow. Since it takes 10 hours to access fat fuel, if you're always having breakfast too early and dinner too late, you'll never get to the fat.
So then when is the optimal time to have breakfast and the next meal and dinner and et cetera?
I'll lay it all out. Breakfast, follow the 2 to 4 hour rule. You have 2 to 4 hours to have breakfast from when the time you wake up. That's 20% of your caloric intake, really is about all you should have. The actual fuel mix is about 55% carbs, 30% fat, and no more than 7% saturated, and 15% protein. And then you have to decide which is going to be, snacks are out. The idea that you're going to starve to death between breakfast and lunch and lunch and dinner. The average American is eating 523 calories of snacks a day. You don't want to do that. Then you decide when is your big meal going to be. You need one big one, lunch or dinner. Which would you prefer, lunch or dinner?
Well, for sure, lunch.
Great, lunch. So that's 50% of your caloric intake. You want to front load it with low glycemic food first to take up a lot of that space, like a salad, that kind of stuff, and then whatever your entree and then dessert is. That's going to give you about 10 hours worth of fuel. And then what time do you normally have breakfast in the morning?
Well, that was going to be my next question about the breakfast thing, because you said 2 to 4 hours. So does that mean if you're eating breakfast within an hour or a half an hour of waking that there's something not good about that?
Well, it may not be. For example, let's say you woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning and said, I'm going to have breakfast at 6:30. There's nothing wrong with that, except for the fact that if you want a shot at really burning some of that fat, you're going to need about 14 to 15 hours between your last meal of the day today and breakfast tomorrow morning. So if you finished eating...
Okay, so it's not so much about timing it based off of the time you wake up. It's about timing it based off of the time you had dinner the night before.
Exactly, yeah.
And Fred does. And Fred really lays out everything in his book, The Buffer Zone Diet, which... he gives you not only what to do and gives you exact kind of guidelines, but he really talks in depth about the science behind it. And that's something that I found really compelling and impressive. So I highly recommend that you get his book. And I am going to be giving away 2 signed copies of The Buffer Zone. So I invite people to write me at dr.nina@winthedietwar and tell me why you want a copy of this book. And I will pick 2 people to send it to them. Maybe it could be you.
Okay, great.
All right.
Sorry?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, okay, so you said 14 hours is the minimum between the dinner the night before and breakfast the next morning?
The simplest way to think of it is this, and maybe this is you want to run your body 20% of the time on triglycerides. There's 168 hours in a week. 20% of that is 33.6 hours, or 33 hours and 36 minutes, divided by 7 days, is 4 hours and 48 minutes. So if you could theoretically shoot for 4 hours and 48 minutes of fat fuel burning every single night while you sleep, that means 14 hours and 48 minutes between last meal tonight and breakfast tomorrow morning. That will equate to 437.5 calories of pure body fat every single day. That means every 8 days, approximately, you lose 1 pure pound of body fat.
That's pretty good. And we have another caller who's just joined us. Hello, caller. Who's this? What's your name? Hello? Oh, we're having a little trouble with the phones today, but caller, you can... the last person who called in, please call back. Fred is here to answer your questions. So Fred, you're saying things that really are the opposite of what we have been taught for so long, and I think that's what's so revolutionary about this book. Here's our caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina and with Fred.
Hi, this is Nick.
Hi, Nick.
How are you?
Hi, Nick. I can hear... Is your phone still on? Because I think we can hear ourselves in the background.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. I'm really enjoying the discussion that's going on. I'm just curious. Now, I know you said it's not a diet, but are you suggesting how many calories a day someone should have?
Yeah, of course. There's something called the Hamwi equation, which tells you, because look, if you have 10,000 calories a day, you're going to get fat. I mean, so the Hamwi equation is, I'll do it for men real quick, and then I'll do it for women. For a man, if you get 106 pounds for every 5 feet. So you're 5 feet, 106 pounds. Then you get 6 pounds for each inch after that. So, for example, for me, I'm 6 feet tall, so I would get 106 pounds. That would be my ideal weight. And then I would say, okay, 6 times the extra 12 inches, that's 72. So 72 plus 106 is 178 pounds. Now, you take that, and you multiply that times 10. So the minimum number of calories my body would require just to lay in bed and keep my eyes open is 1,780 calories. If you're sedentary, you take that number, multiply it times 1.3. If you're fairly active, times 1.5. If you're extremely active, times 2. For women, it's you get 100 pounds for every 5 feet, and then another 5 pounds for each inch after that. So if a woman was 5'2", she would say, okay, that's 100 pounds plus 5 pounds for the 2 inches. That's 110. 110 times 1.5. Times 10 is 1,100 calories, and then you multiply that times 1.3, 1.5, or 2. So, no, clearly there is a minimum number of calories, and I'm surprised how many times I meet women who aren't eating enough food in the day. It's not too much. And then you have, on the other side, there's a caps. As long as you stay between the minimum and the maximum, and I put all of those equations inside the Buffer Zone diet book, then you don't have to count them. Counting calories is too hard. Just count meals.
Yeah.
You got 3 shots at eating a day, no snacks. You're going to have 2 types of meals, a primer meal, which is 20% of your caloric intake, and a full tank meal, which is one big delicious meal every single day. So breakfast is always going to be your primer meal, and then lunch or dinner will be your big full tank meal, and then the other one will be your primer meal. If you do that, if you fuel to go, give your body the fuel it needs before it needs it, not afterwards, don't feed the past, then you're going to be healthy and you're going to feel good and you're not going to have to worry about overeating.
And then the exercising is just a plus.
Yeah, about 30 minutes of cardio. 2 things make you hungry. Snacking makes you hungry. Eating makes you hungry. And actually exercise makes you hungry too. So you don't need to go overboard. About 30 minutes of cardio a day and about 10 minutes of strength training a day, and you've been in good shape.
And I think people often overestimate how many calories that they're burning at the gym. So you see people who they're on the treadmill, they're sweating, they're red-faced, they look like they're about to fall over. And my mom was like, do I give that person CPR? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then they leave, and you hear them saying, wow, I just worked out, so I just earned myself that, jumbo, double, triple burger thing with fries. No, you didn't. You didn't. So it's interesting. When Fred first showed me an early version of this book, I'm often told, well, how are you so thin? Like, what do you eat? And I realized that I actually naturally eat, now that I'm past my eating disorder behavior of the past, that I naturally eat the way he's talking about in the Buffer Zone. So it was like, wow, I now understand the science behind it.
Yeah.
But that was, I can tell you that it's a good way to go.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Wait, Nick, I just have to ask you, Nick is a regular caller, so I just want to check in with you about the scale.
I'm not going on the scale.
Woo!
That's one thing that's great and something that's even better. I've started to walk, and which is really great. I'm really happy. So these are two things that were goals for me, and I'm doing them, and I feel a lot better. And every morning the scale is there, and I just give it a dirty look, and I walk on and do my...
I'm proud of you. You just keep scowling at that scale, then maybe one day you'll get rid of it. But hey, I don't want to push too far.
We don't get along.
You have a dysfunctional relationship with the scale. But
exactly.
Well, I'm happy because I know for so long the scale ruled your life, and for you to have liberated yourself from the scale is wonderful, and that's. Keep up the good work, and
thank you.
And we'll look for an update next week.
Okay.
Okay.
You got it.
Bye, Nick.
Bye.
Yeah. So, what surprised you in doing the research? What do you think surprised you the most while you were doing this? And why don't you tell people what you did for research? Like. I said you weren't a doctor, but you could be, because share a little bit about the kind of research and the scope of research that you did.
Well, what I did was, the very first step was, well, what's true, what's not true? And so one of the things that I didn't think I wanted to do was write a book. I mean, I was convinced there are currently 691,000 titles out there in the field of weight loss and diet and stuff. So I just thought, I mean, the truth has got to be there somewhere. So I went out and read the top 20 diet books that were out there, figuring, hey, man, they're going to tell me what to do. And there were little nuggets and bits of truth of information that I thought was interesting there. And then it hit me. You know, I've never really studied the human body. So I went and actually took lectures and classes and stuff like that and how every system in the human body worked. And so
every system, like as in he took a class on anatomy, he took a class on, help me out here, but he took classes on everything.
Yeah, and from MDs to nutritionists to dietitians. And so I just bombarded my brain with all of this information, and I'm pretty good at connecting the dots. And then once I did, and I laid it all out, it became obvious to me that clearly, there's a lot of people doing emotional eating, right? I'm sad, I'm going to eat, or I'm happy, I'm going to eat, I'm bored, I'm going to eat. And I think that's a part of it. But so many people didn't understand this language their body and their mind was giving them. And so many times, I mean, they say there are some people that are scared of heights because they say that when they get to the top of a tall building, there's a voice that says to them, jump.
Oh,
That's a scary thought. And so if you don't understand where these scary thoughts are coming from, then you can have a problem.
Hold that thought as we welcome our new caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina and with Fred.
Hi. I had a question. What are your thoughts on apple cider vinegar? Is that a waste of time, or does it actually work?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of cool properties, right, about apple cider vinegar, but I think what people do is they'll say, I mean, I will, I mean, the book has sold, gosh, hundreds of thousands of copies worldwide, and they'll come to me and say, what's your thoughts on green juice? What's your thoughts on enemas? What's your thoughts on this? And what I would say is that there's probably anything you couldn't have said that couldn't be of some benefit. How are you specifically using this apple cider vinegar?
I usually take it at night.
Okay.
Just 2 ounces. Just take it like a shot.
Okay. And what?
And I also.
Go ahead.
I also do the, because you had said, I do the 16-hour fast. Basically, it's not eating from dinner time from 16 hours in the morning.
Yeah, that's pretty, well, when are you not eating? Are you not eating from, when's your big meal?
Like 6 o'clock at dinner. 6 o'clock, and then I'll count how many hours. Usually, whatever time we have dinner, 6, 6:30, 7.
Yeah.
And then I'll just count 16 hours from then into the morning. It actually does work.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's the biggest buffer zone. It's the idea of, you want a fuel to go, which means you want to have your meals during the day. And then when the sun goes down, the fork goes down. So that's the kind of the key component of the buffer zone. So there's a lot of people that have been intuitively doing that, saying, hey, I've noticed that when I eat a lot of late night food, I gain weight. And that's absolutely accurate.
Thank you, caller. We're going to jump on to the... Thank you so much for calling. We're going to jump on to another caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina and Fred Cuellar.
Hi. I was wanting to say thank you to Fred Cuellar for his book. I'm calling from Houston, and I asked my brother to tune in L.A. I'm not sure if he's listening, but again, I just wanted to say hello to Mr. Fred and say thank you for his book, and I'm down 42 pounds today.
Oh, wonderful. What's your name?
My name's A.B. Tovar from Houston.
Oh, I know A.B. A.B.'s fantastic.
Well,
congratulations, A.B.
A.B., that's wonderful. And how has your experience been? Tell our listeners about how your experience has been with this and what's made it different.
Well, I've tried dieting before, and I've never been able to go below 200. If something would happen, I'd go on vacation, or I'd mess up, gain some pounds, and then maybe give up because of how hard I had tried losing the weight and then how easily I gained it back. Well, I started Buffer Zone late February, and here during the summer, I've gone on two vacations, and yeah, I've put on some weight. But, you know, with the plan that he has, I was able to still, you know, come back down and still be at 40 pounds, you know, within that 40-pound range. So I started at 218, now I'm 176.
Wow. So, congratulations.
I mean, just, you know, being able to have a game plan, and that really works, I guess. Being able to still enjoy the foods that I love. I mean, it took me 20 years to get up to 218 pounds, and obviously that was by eating everything in sight. Well, now I can kind of control things by just, you know, following everything that's, you know, that Fred has suggested and everything that he has said, which has made it a whole lot easier for me to lose weight. And by the way, I wish I would have done things a little different, maybe by pushing myself to do exercise, because I've been able to lose weight without, like, exercising or going to the gym in order to, you know, lose weight. So what I'll try to do is work around the house here and there and do some things, and I've noticed that when I'd sweat, you know, around the house, then I've noticed that it, you know, that I would lose weight. But I would definitely recommend exercising, of course, while on the buffer zone.
AB, thank you so much for sharing your story. I just want to also add that one thing you said was important, which is you said you didn't have to give up the foods you love. And from my perspective of the psychology of eating, a lot of times the anticipation of deprivation, meaning, oh, I can never have pizza again, so I better have a whole pizza now, is often what leads people to overeat certain kinds of foods or whatever. And it sounds like when you give yourself permission and you know you could have what you want, you can eat a reasonable portion, and that is satisfying. And that's another thing that I like about this book, is that, of course, Fred is suggesting be healthy overall, but don't feel as if there's good foods and bad foods. It's just healthy or not healthy, and it's a very reasonable way to eat and to live, and it's sustainable.
Right. I definitely feel in control. So thanks again.
Thanks, you.
Thanks. Thanks for calling, AB. Congratulations.
Hey, Joe.
Those stories just must make your day.
Yeah.
I mean, how wonderful.
Yeah. To have people who will send me pictures of them and their kids, and you know, to have told me that their dad had died at a particular age, and they thought they were going to have to die in their 50s as well, and then to find out that, you know, they no longer are type 2 diabetic and stuff. It's wonderful. I'm glad I'm helping people.
Well, and here's another people. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr.
Hi,
Nina.
Hi, Dr.
And
Nina.
Hello. What's your name?
My name is Laurel, and I am in Georgia.
Hi, Laurel.
And my question is it's not necessarily related to weight loss, but weight gain. And more for my husband than for myself. I have struggled with my weight my whole life, but I married a man who has never struggled with his weight and actually struggles with keeping weight on. He eats all the time, and I struggle to find enough snacks for him during the day because he is eating like every couple hours to try to maintain his weight. And I'm just wondering if maybe that's doing more harm than it is good, and if you had any thoughts on maintaining weight or gaining weight with such a program.
You know, what's interesting is you see this a lot in the military. If you ask the military what the biggest problem they have with some of their people is that they can't keep them maintaining the weight. They get out in the field, they get out there in Afghanistan and all these different places, and they can't afford to have their troops get thin. And so what you're going to want to do is have him take a look at some of the meals that he's eating and what is the nutrient dense are the meals that he's eating. A calorie isn't a calorie. I mean, so you could have 100 calories of something that doesn't have a lot of nutrients in it, and you could have 100 calories of something that has a lot of nutrients to it. And then the amount of fiber that he has as well. What kind of job does he have? What does he do for a living?
Well, he has a desk job. He works at a big corporation in Atlanta every day, and he eats very healthy. Like I know what he's eating because I'm making it, packing it, sending it for him. So I know he's not eating junk. He's not eating chips and empty calories all day. But I feel like that's kind of what he's wanting to turn to because he's like, I just need to eat. I need to get more calories in. And he doesn't really work out at this point, so it's not like he's doing heavy
cardio
or something like that, burning a ton of calories. So I'm just always kind of like struggling with how to help him because this has never been my problem. So
I think a lot of people listening would wish it was their problem. It's a very rare problem to have.
How tall is he and how much does he weigh?
He's like 5'11". He weighs about 150.
Okay, so yeah, he's about 20 pounds or so underweight. So one of the things...
And he's always been, he's 37, and he says he's the same as he was in high school. And this is kind of always
And he's had a case, he's had a physical recently? He's been gone to the doctor to make sure everything's all copacetic?
Yes, he's had lots of blood work done actually recently, and he's found out he has some feed sensitivity, so we're kind of trying to work around those too right now.
Caller, we're going to have to let you go and take another call. I think that he sounds like he has just a naturally fast metabolism.
Yeah.
And he sounds like he's a supportive husband and you're a supportive wife.
Yeah.
So
give him some peanut butter.
Thank you.
Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina and Fred Quaylor. Hello? What happened to the caller? Hello? I don't know what happened there, but there you are. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina and Fred.
Oh, hello. This is Jordan.
Hi, Jordan.
Hi. How are you two doing today?
Well, we're doing really well, Jordan.
Hi, Jordan.
How are you? What do you have a question for Fred?
I do. Yes. I'm great, thank you. But I was just wondering, I know a lot of the questions have been regarding weight. What about in times of loneliness regarding food? When you're lonely, when you're bored, everyone always says, find a distraction, go on a walk, but it never really helps that lingering thought go away. What's like a good, what can you do when you have those times where you're like, shoot, I'm here alone at home and I want food because I'm bored, because I'm lonely, because I'm...
Well, Jordan, I think I can help you with that because that's more my area than Fred's. So if we think about loneliness symbolically, and by the way, often people think they're bored when they're actually lonely. So boredom is about needing to do something, and the solution to boredom is to do something. Loneliness is the sense of needing to be with people, and the true solution of loneliness is to be with other people so that you feel that sense of fulfillment and satisfaction. And again, note how those words are the same as the ones that we use for food, right? So food is fulfilling, food is satisfying. We say the same things about relationships. The problem with, hey, take a walk if you're lonely, is that it's not going to distract you from your loneliness. You're going to be lonely on your walk. And so it's really important to cultivate a sense of solitude. Now, the difference between loneliness and solitude is loneliness is when you're alone with nobody and no part of yourself that's available to make you feel better. Solitude is when you're alone, but you've got a part of you that can be there for you and with you and kind of to talk to yourself in a compassionate, supportive way where you both recognize that you feel that way, because often people try to dismiss their feelings. Oh, don't feel that way. Here's a million reasons why you shouldn't. But to say, yeah, I am lonely, and this is hard, and it's painful, and I'm not always going to feel this way, but I do feel this way now. Now, what can I do to make myself feel better that doesn't have to do with food? So when you address the underlying feeling, the emptiness, then you're not going to resolve it symbolically with food. Easier said than done, but it's some food for thought to think about.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thanks for calling, Jordan.
All right, well, have a good rest of your day, you two.
Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Adorable. yeah, I mean, so Fred's here really talking about from a biological, physiological place about how do we lose weight. But of course, there is the emotional component, and some of it has to do with emotions or conflicts that we're not even aware of.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just find yourself turning to food without even realizing that you're resolving a psychological problem. But for more on that, tune in next week or most weeks. This is definitely like a one-of-a-kind kind of experience and interview to be able to talk about the biology and physiology of weight loss. And I think this idea... Oh, here's another caller. Hold on. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. We have about 3 minutes. What's your name?
Hey, it's Elena. I finally found you. How can I order the book?
The book's everywhere. It's in every bookstore. It's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. It's in 40 different countries all over the world, wherever you're listening. But it's totally available.
Does it come in large print?
Yes,
I don't see very well.
Yeah. It's,
that's
it's,
why I couldn't find Dr. Nina.
Yeah, no.
Or audio. Does it come in audio?
Well, I'm going to be recording the audio soon, but actually the print is... But the print is actually very easy to read.
The print is big.
And if on the Kindle, if you do a digital version, you can actually make the print any size you want and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's very easy to read.
And if you write me at dr.nina@winthedietwar.com and you tell me why you want this book, I have 2 copies that I'm going to be giving out to listeners. So tell me why you want this book, and you may get it in the mail from me. And it'll be signed by Fred,
too. I would like to weigh 176 like that man who called in. I weigh well over 176, and I have tried every book, TV show, program, whatever you want to call it, and I am 59 years old as of June 21st of this year, and I'm tired of being overweight.
I'm with you. The Buffer Zone diet will work for you. I promise you.
The Buffer Zone will work. It will. It's a paradigm shift. It's a whole different way of thinking about food.
I tried everything.
Yeah. Well,
how to find you, I'll be there next week.
Wonderful. Feel free to call back.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
I will. Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye. I mean, I think that so many people, there's so many people who can resonate and relate to this problem of doing everything right, but then nothing changes, and it's heartbreaking. And that's why, you know, I love that you put the not only your personal experience, but the as I said before, copious amount of research into this. That I think you're already making a difference in people's lives, and I'm excited that you're going to keep doing that. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody, I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific time here on latalkradio.com to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. You can also find me at winthedietwar.com, where I have some free giveaway stuff for you, and kickthedieethabit.com. Please tune in next week, and I will see you then. Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on